I'm Dr. Kimberly Manny.
And this is Dr. Ashley McMullen. And you're listening to the Human Doctor Podcast, where we explore the human side of medicine, along with teaching, living, learning, and all things in between. Using the power of storytelling, conversation, and connectedness.
Hey, we're two dope academic internal medicine doctors, but we ain't your doctors. So if you perceive anything we say here as medical advice, no, it ain't that. Also, the things we say, they only reflect our brilliant Black woman magic mind and not our employers.
You could have been anywhere, y'all, but you chose to be here with us, and we appreciate you. Let's go. Good evening, Dr. Manning.
Good afternoon to you, Dr. McMullen.
No, why, thank you.
What's cracking?
So I got actually quite a bit done today. I went to the dentist earlier.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Turns out my teeth and my gums are perfect.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
That's a strong word. Okay, that's good.
I'm really proud of that. That's part of why I'm also so happy.
I mean, you do have like really good teeth. I mean, yeah. I should just point that out. Well, y'all, when you're at the Society of General Internal Medicine meeting in Boston this coming May, check out Dr. McMullen's teeth. They look good.
Well, before I, you know, get on my high horse, I do want to point out that, you know, I was really bad about flossing for a long time. And I made a goal this year because I had some gum inflammation last time I was at the dentist that I was going to be better about flossing. And turns out that it's working for me. So.
Right. So you're flossing about the fact that you're flossing.
Yes. Yes. That's what I just did.
I see what you did there. That was a real meta. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Let this just serve as your service announcement. If you have been waiting on making the dental appointment, just do it. You will be glad when you get it out the way.
Yes, you absolutely will. And it is connected to all sorts of things your oral health is. So Don't be snoozing on your oral health, especially if you are not trying to have like heart disease and a whole host of other inflammatory situations.
Amen.
Yes. So I'm still on the hospital service.
Mm-hmm.
It has been busy, but I actually managed to get one day off this time. And normally I don't take a day off when I'm on service. And that's because my dear friend, Dr. Stacey Higgins, covered my service for one day because a very dear friend of mine, her daughter became a Delta. And I rounded on Saturday. Left Grady Hospital, went to the airport, flew to Virginia, went to see my niece, AKA my friend's daughter, my play niece, become a Delta. I also wrote her a letter, so that was very special. And, you know, got my cry on, my hug on, and all the things that we do. And then flew back last night.
Wow.
And then went to Grady today. And you know what? Let me tell you why I'm bringing this up.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was a non-repeatable life event that I would regret if I missed. So y'all, here's your word from me, because I'm not telling the story today. It's Ashley. So just get ready. My word for y'all today, if you're trying to figure out what you're going to do and what you're going to not do, whether or not you're willing to jump through a bunch of hoops for something or not, is ask yourself a couple questions, maybe one bonus one. The first question is this a non-repeatable life event? So, you know, if this is your 27th birthday, yeah, I'm sorry, I might miss the cookout for that. Your 30th birthday, I might get on a plane and go with you for that, depending upon who you are. The other one is, will I regret it if I don't do it? And I mean real regret, not like a little bit of FOMO. I'm talking about real regret. And I think the bonus question is who is the person that this revolves around? Because it could be a non-repeatable life event for somebody that's not that significant to you. But if they are significant to you, you should ask yourself that. And I have missed non-repeatable life events for special people at points in my life when I did not know what I know now. And I just think whoever you are, if you're trying to decide if you're going to do something, ask yourself that.
That's a word.
It is a word. And I was there and I'm glad and I was tired today.
Mm-hmm.
But I was still like walking on cloud nine because I did something that I knew I would regret if I hadn't done it.
Man, I love that.
Yeah, I love it too, man. Ladies, gentlemen, and non-binary superstar listeners, y'all, it is your lucky day. And you know, already know why. I'm not going to even go through the whole, you know, thing I normally go through. I'm just going to tell you that this queen who is sitting in front of me, but not really in front of me, but virtually, with her clean, sparkling teeth that were perfect. And that's a quote. In addition to her dazzling dentition, she has a story for you. Yes, she does. And let's find out what the what is.
Okay. I guess this is happening.
Ashley, what is the what? I'm sorry, Dr. McMullen.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
Put some respect on it.
The what this evening is transparency.
Transparency. Mm-hmm. I like it. Oh, can I tell you something real quick before you tell your story?
Of course.
Did you know that one of our number one fans, my younger sister, Jolie has been keeping a spreadsheet of all of our whats? I promise. An Excel spreadsheet. And she knows how many whats we've repeated. Like, I don't think we've used transparency, but here's the deal. Jolie will know. I'm going to send you the spreadsheet. It's crazy. I was like, why do you have this? She's like, oh, I don't know. Can you tell she was a valedictorian?
I appreciate your keeping the seats. Although I am a little fearful to look at that. I felt
she
pretty
said, we've only had a couple of repeats. You've only had a couple of repeats. And I was like, why? Oh, a what tracker. So shout out to that.
Oh man, I appreciate that. Yes, I'm fairly confident slash hopeful that transparency is a new one for us. So, you know, I was toying around with this word because I wasn't quite sure if, you know, it fully conveyed what I was reaching for, but I'm curious how you think about transparency.
I think of transparency as what you see is what you get. Mm-hmm. So when you say something outside of my room, it is the same thing as what you're saying inside of my room. Or if there's a set of rules, they do not require a PhD to understand. It's, you can look at it and figure it out.
Yeah, I like that. I think where I was leaning with this was kind of what you said about, you know, what's said outside the room is what's said in the room. And I was thinking about this in the context of, you know, how we talk to patients, particularly how we deliver difficult news and how tempting, you know, and not out of malintent, but, you know, the challenge of telling people straight up, like what's going on, like what's the reality, like what the deal is. And I remember very vividly a very early patient encounter I had when I was on my sub-internship as a fourth-year medical student in internal medicine. So it was kind of my first foray into kind of being the point person for the management of patients' care inside the hospital, which, as a fun fact, again, this is the same hospital where I was born in. So I'm back at this hospital doing my sub-I, and I'm really enjoying the month. I have an incredible team, incredible senior resident. The attending was okay, but the residents were great. And we had a patient come in through the emergency room who the senior resident, shout out to Ahmed, sent me down to go admit this patient. So basically go kind of be the first person to get the patient's history, do the exam, kind of figure out what we should be doing with their care since they're definitely coming to our team to be admitted to the hospital. I went down to the emergency room and I got into this, like at that time, this was one of the sickest patients I had seen, and not from, you know, an instability standpoint, like they were about to crash immediately. It's just that they had organ failure of multiple systems, you know, especially like end-stage liver disease and all the complications that come from that. End-stage renal disease, so they required dialysis. Mm-hmm. They also had really odd vascular disease. So there was a lot of areas of necrosis. So it was quite the scene to kind of go down and evaluate this person. And despite all this, this was probably one of like the funniest and like most jovial people that I had come across. You know, this person was really sick, but you know, it was almost like they didn't realize it. Along with the liver disease and the difficulty with clearing kind of toxins from the blood, he had something called encephalopathy. So, you know, he'd be talking and then kind of get like sleepy and like kind of mid-sentence, like drift off and then come back. And so, you know, it was kind of difficult to kind of get a sense of what had been going on. But apparently, this person had been sick, kind of bouncing between hospitals, different providers, and saying like maybe transplant, maybe this, but, you know, never really anything more or less definitive. And this person had their partner there who was lovely, by his side the whole time. And, you know, for them, it was just kind of another trip to the hospital because, you know, he had some abnormal labs and the people send him in. So, one of the other things I love about this case was this was my first paracentesis.
Oh, okay.
So, the first time I had the chance to perform a procedure where try to get fluid off of this person's abdomen. So, basically, because of the liver disease, they developed all this fluid overload and it was filled in the abdomen. So, I remember gowning up and putting all the stuff on, the sterile gown, the face shield, the gloves. And I remember like getting really hot and I was nervous. So, my hands were shaking. I'm getting ready to put this very long needle into this man's belly. And he's like kind of drifting in and out, like, you know, like he's been doing this whole time. And as I'm getting ready to put the needle in, suddenly he opens his eyes and says, "Boo." Then he
He said
burst.
boo.
Yes. Then he burst out laughing. I am literally like shaking. I have this giant needle in my hand.
Oh God, that is so funny.
Yeah. I'm coming at you with like a 6-inch needle and you're like you're cracking jokes and scaring me.
Boo.
So yeah, you know, as time goes on, we're treating the symptoms, treating the confusion, the encephalopathy, the ascites in the abdomen and doing the dialysis. And but I think that over time, his partner kind of picked up on this sense that what we're talking about outside the room is not what she's coming to understand inside the room. And what was realistic was that this person was probably not going to be eligible for a transplant, just given the degree of his illness and the fact that he had multiple systems that were failing. And nobody had really told them that straight. There was one morning when we were rounding with the whole team, and I was kind of, you know, presenting the patient inside the room. We had done our exam and we're turning to leave. And the patient's partner stopped us and she specifically looked at me. She's like, "Wait, I need to talk to you." And I could see like tears welling up in her eyes. And so I stayed behind, but you know, the attending kind of caught on too and didn't want to pull everybody out the room. But she's looking directly at me. And she's shaking her head and she's like, "Is he dying? Is he gonna die?" And at that point, before I could even say anything, the attending was just like, "Well, you know what? Why don't we make this a more dedicated conversation? We're gonna finish rounding and then we're gonna come back as a team and we're gonna talk about this." And I did kind of hang back a little bit after that and tried to comfort her, but you know, it was a little jarring because up to that point, you know, they had seen so many different doctors. And it was clear that, you know, this is the first time they were kind of getting the sense that something isn't going right. So we come back as a team afterwards, and I've plenty of things to say about this attending, but I will say that I really did admire and appreciate being able to watch this conversation take place. Because he basically told it to them straight. He was just like, "Look, this is the reality. I don't think you're going to get a transplant. The fact of the matter is, you know, you have a terminal illness." And the patient just kind of looked at him so confused. He was just like, "But wait, I'm not dying." And the attending was like, "You are dying.
Good
You are."
Lord.
It was super heavy, super heavy. But it needed to be said. because it was the first time our patient had really started grieving. And, we still had him on our service for a couple more days. He was still willing to crack a few jokes, but there was still a bit of melancholy in the room for a while. But we did eventually transfer them onto, or transfer the patient onto to hospice. It felt like the right thing to do, but it was just so hard as a medical student to recognize, this person had to have passed through so many layers before someone was fully transparent. And I carried that with me. There was another experience that I talked about on the podcast in one of the earlier seasons about a patient of mine who was also, dying of end-stage liver disease in and out of the hospital. And a patient was able to go and die in his home country because we had the transparent conversation that was painful but necessary. And so, I continue to remind myself of what we deprive our patients of sometimes when we tend to kind of dance around these subjects. And of course, we're wrong sometimes, and that can be scary too. But, I would hate to leave someone to kind of push the can down the road and get to a point where they're not even able to,
Understand, yeah.
or even say goodbye.
Certainly, there is your patient's right to know what's going on, but then there's also being empathic and thoughtful about how it's communicated. Right, because sometimes people say, I'm just a person who likes to just keep it real. You can keep it real, but you have to also realize that, you can actually traumatize somebody by the way that you say something. I'm a big fan of making sure that the things you're talking about outside of the room are the things you're talking about inside of the room. And that's a saying that I have a lot when I'm rounding. I was just saying that to somebody today. It was a difficult, air quotes, difficult patient encounter. It was some things that we were doing that the patient wasn't really pleased about. And I said, everything I'm saying to you is this stuff I was talking about outside of your room. So this is what we were talking about outside of your room. And this is what I talked to your other doctor about, who said this, 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 and this. And this is what we thought about. I think the other thing we aren't transparent about, even like, there's life or death things, but there's also things that are not life or death that we're not honest about. Right. Like, if I don't want to give you, a certain narcotic pain medication, right? I can just say no, or I can actually tell you specifically what my concern is. My concern is if I give you this medicine, it's not responsible of me, because what could happen is your body could start to feel a certain way in response to it. And then when you run out of the medicine, you'll actually feel worse. And because of what I did, if I wasn't responsible, when you come to try to get relief, people are not going to treat you kindly. They're not going to give you something that's going to help. I don't want that to happen to you. And even when people get mad when I say stuff like that, I actually find that they end up being okay. I just, here's why I'm not going to give you antibiotics. This is why I don't think that this is strep throat. I want to show you something. I know this sounds nerdy, but this is the way that we decide if we think somebody should get tested for strep throat. Let me show you. And I just show them the stuff that we're looking at, whatever criteria we're looking at. Like, look, here you go. But I don't think we do that enough, because we often don't have enough time. But it also is that we don't like confrontation either.
No, that's so true. To your point though, being transparent with your thought process, at least, even if the patients don't agree with it, or maybe think about it a different way, and you guys maybe come to a mutual conclusion after the fact, I think that it's just a greater level of respect and trust that's built when you're just able to put forward, like, this is how I'm approaching this.
So true. I mean, and yeah, patients have agency. So I'll tell you what I think, but we can co-create a plan together that's one that works for you. Now, sometimes what you want me to do is not something I can do. But I just tell people that. So I'm not going to be able to do that. That's not something I'm going to be able to do. I just find there's so much that's circuitous about any conversation that could potentially be contentious or involve conflict, that it just makes it worse. You waste way more time too. Because when people get mad at you, you in there cleaning up a whole bunch of stuff that didn't have to get cleaned up. Not, and I was telling my resident today, it's kind of like a decision to lie or not to lie. It's just too much to remember. If I have two versions of what I'm talking to you about, then I have to remember the version that's in here with my team and then the version that's in here with you. And that's not good. And I just don't have the cognitive energy to be
You're
trying to
right.
figure it out.
I am just classically a terrible liar at baseline. And so,
This patient was like going off today and telling me that, like, oh yeah, you know, this person, this and this person, that. And I was like, well, that person is on my team. So I accept full responsibility for everything. And no, but you're good. I was like, no. All of this stuff that doctor was saying to you came from me. You know, and that's a transparency too, because sometimes transparency is in accountability,
Ooh,
just
yes.
owning that.
Yes.
No, I'm the one that was responsible for that decision. They changed my medicine and they did this. And I'm like, no, that was me who suggested that.
Yes.
So if it was a bad idea, then it sounds like it was a bad idea. So yeah, that's my
Yeah.
fault.
Now, transparency can go a long way in these
Yeah, and
contexts.
it's a good habit to get into. And that takes a lot of practice because the way our training works, we are trained to do something completely different away from the patient and then do something else in front of the patient. And you know what? Let me tell you something happened to me today. Me and my resident were talking about this patient that I told you about that was kind of challenging. And we had gone to see the patient and then we were going to go back to see them again. And we were walking up the hall preparing to go back to see the patient a second time. And as we were walking, we were just kind of talking and you know, making small talk and everything. And like right like in the corner up against the wall, sitting in like a chair, was the patient that we were going to see.
Oof.
It like startled us because where they were was somewhere where we did not expect anybody to be. And my resident was like, oh, hi. And we walked away and my resident looked at me. She said, you know what? That was a very good lesson. She's like, I am so glad that we are not in the habit of, you know, saying unsavory things about our patients, like away from them. And I was like, yeah. She's like, yeah, you know, I mean, I jumped when I saw the patient, but we don't talk bad about our patients. That's just not something that we do. And I can't say that I was always a person like that. In residency, I was definitely present for some very unsavory remarks made about patients, but that could have been really bad. Like, shoot, 20 years ago, that would not have gone the same way. Because it
Definitely.
would have been, you know, being sarcastic and talking junk on the way over there. Yeah, but God don't like ugly, so.
No. Sure doesn't.
Transparency is a beautiful thing. And in full transparency, I love me some you and deeply appreciate that there's transparency in the way that we love each other as sisters and friends. So
Absolutely.
that's something else we can normalize.
Yes, in full transparency, the way we talk to each other on the podcast is exactly how we talk in real life, just more cursing from Dr. Manning's side.
I like cursing so much. Full transparency, y'all.
Yeah, we let a few slip the last episode.
Yeah, but you know, the Lord know my heart. All right.
All right.
Love you.
Love you too. That wraps up this week's episode of the Human Doctor Podcast.
Special thanks to our favorite brother gastroenterologist, Dr. Chuma Obiname, for the beats. Shout out to the Dr. Ashley McMullen for editing and production.
Mad love to our podcast family at The Nocturnist and the Clinical Problem Solvers, our Med Twitter fam.
And especially, shout out to all of you, our listeners.
Until next week, remember,
we see you and you are enough.
Holla! Holla.